This is the Future Motion Podcast with your host, Michael Steinberg.
Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. I got some exercise in today, and well, now I'm here.
That's good. Yeah, I feel like you got to get the exercise. Did you go to a gym or outside?
Oh, I just went outside. I'm 7 miles from nearest paved road, so going to a gym isn't exactly an option for me.
Well, you got to. I guess your exercise is seasonal a little bit.
A little, yeah.
Cool, man. Well, let's just like kind of jump into it. Let's get a little bit of background for you because, I'm excited today to be having probably this will be our most VR heavy episode, which is really exciting for me because I think the show is going to be going a lot more in that way in the future, and I think just the industry in general is going to be going in that direction. So. But yeah, let's just like go ahead and dive into a little bit about your background, who you are, and then we'll jump into a lot of the hot topics on the news this week. So tell me, like, who are you? What do you do exactly? Where are you from? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, my name is Von Schmidt. Online, I go by Valgen, for my YouTube, Twitter, VR chatter, the likes. I'm a recent college graduate that focuses on development inside of VR platforms, primarily VR chat specifically. I started college as a computer science major, swapped to a art major with a focus in 3D environment design, and now I pretty much program for a living for VR applications.
Yo, that is amazing. That is I love the little journey you took from the start to here. I think we met because I was having some trouble in VR chat and you were doing a lot of cool tutorials on it. And your tutorials in VR chat were the best I've seen by far. And I hit you up and I was like, please help me. And you're like, definitely.
Well, it's pretty easy to be the best when there's no competition. So,
well, it's crazy though. I feel like even just like since we started, you know, doing like our weekly sessions where you helped me out, I feel like in just the past year, VR chat itself has just completely exploded.
Absolutely,
which has been crazy. But let's just kind of go back. So, what got you into? So, where did you say you started again?
So I started as a computer science major, and I wasn't too good at the math that they wanted me to do, so I had moved over to doing 3D modeling as an art major.
Wow.
I got into VR originally during my freshman year of college when my two doors down the hallway, someone had the original Oculus and everything set up in their dorm room.
And wow.
I was
with the controller, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never actually got to touch the thing because it's incredibly expensive and it was like the one on campus. So I picked up one of those plastic put your phone in things, watched a YouTube video, got horribly sick, and then didn't touch it for 2 years. In January of 2018, I had a pretty boring class that I was working on in college, and VR chat kind of blew up on the internet for a bit for some jokes. And I thought, this is hilarious. This is a free platform for uploading game development stuff that just has a already existing ecosystem of users that I can just throw at things to test. And before the month was over, I had 300 hours in VR chat, not even including Unity. So it's kind of been downhill from there, or uphill, depending on how you take it.
I love that. Well, so I want to even go back a little bit. So when you were going into the 3D environment, what programs were you using?
Primarily Blender and a little bit of Unity. It's what my college professor knew at the time because he's actually a developer of some indie games that they work on. They've actually been doing video games since the mid-90s, usually as like Flash stuff, but now it's gotten more to be kind of turn-based space games or the likes. And it's interesting because he's largely a painting professor, but he has a side gig of this video game development. So we got to learn all about Blender, ZBrush, a bit of Unity, mostly just to get the animation set up. And we dove a little bit into Substance Painter for texturing, but that was pretty much nearing the end of that semester.
Yeah, Substance is one of, well, it's one of many programs that I feel like I only use it when I need it. And then, you know, I just, when I'm not using it, I'm like, man, I wish I was using it. And I just, I'm just not enough hours in the day. So then you said you went into Google Cardboard. Google Cardboard, I think just in general, really hurt the VR community, because I had almost the exact same experience you did. And it was like, VR is the future, and everybody was going all ham about it. And then I put on Google Cardboard, and I literally could not comprehend what all the hype was about. It's like, this is terrible. What? Who cares? You know, but little did I know there was the Oculus and, you know, HTC's headsets were out there. And I stopped pursuing it for about, you know, same thing. I think mine was like a year or something, until I actually had somebody get, you know, bring over the really fancy headsets and do the whole setup. But shame on Google. Shame. So then you got into Unity. What was that kind of like for you? Did you feel an instant spark when you got into Unity? What kind of was the things that made you just gravitate towards using it more and more?
Unity I primarily leaned into because, one, that's what VRChat was using, and it was free. That free is major when it comes to accessibility for different users and stuff. So the fact that it is in a state where random people can just get a hold of it and can download it in 15 minutes and start using it is phenomenal. Growing right. up in high school, I actually had quite a few hours in a game engine called Game Maker Studio, and I actually purchased two separate versions of it because I loved playing it so much. It's still my third most used application on Steam. but that's a 2D video game platform, so it's all with yeah. sprites moving around and nothing 3D. It could never handle. It just isn't built for something for VR or the likes. And while I like the interface for Game Maker Studio more than I did Unity at the time, I've gotten more used to how Unity works and I'm more familiar with it. And Unity doesn't have a proprietary programming language like Game Maker does. As well, Unity has gotten a better and better interface over the years, and VRChat's version of Unity has now gotten to a state where we're actually using the good interface. So it's become a lot easier to learn and remember where things are in it.
Yeah, I've been loving Unity. The more I use it, the more I love it. So you like Unity, you start realizing you like Unity. There's kind of that crossover into VRChat. What made you kind of go heavy into the VRChat realm versus doing your own thing or other games?
Well, the greatest thing about developing something for VRChat specifically is that so much is already handled to begin with. I don't have to worry about hosting a server where I can store things in order for people to jump on and experience it. I don't have to worry about setting up the player movement and everything for moving their hands around. That all just exists. I don't have to worry about programming how to interact with a button. I just use the systems that VRChat already has for interacting with buttons. There's so many things, and networking. Programming the networking for VRChat is... It's still pretty wonky, but it's so much less that you have to do than writing it just from yourself. Like, starting from right. absolutely nothing is a massive task when it comes to developing a platform or multiplayer experience, let alone one that is VR compatible.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I'm trying to make kind of my own thing right now, and it feels almost impossible. And it's really nice, yeah, that, like you said, VRChat just kind of taking all that weight off and just letting you focus on the creativity. It's so crazy. And plus, the community is awesome. It's got a massive community that seems to be growing every day. So with VRChat, I love that's kind of, you know, what kind of led you there. And I feel like that's kind of what got me more into VRChat was the same thing. It just seemed like I you know, I know how to do 3D modeling and I could upload it into Unity. And then they had the kind of SDK kits where you just download that and you can import the teleporters, the mirrors, and you just drag and drop those in your worlds, which is so cool. So with coding, how did you dive in? What was your kind of like method of going from coding? Because it uses C sharp in Unity. And then it has Udon coding. Well, it was kind of like jumping into that for the first time.
Yeah, so originally VRChat didn't have a programming language. They had a system called Triggers, which was basically a very rudimentary system of click button, move object, teleport player. And it wasn't very expandable. What we actually had to rely on primarily was a bunch of whitelisted assets that we could use that Unity made. And pretty much we just abused these scripts as much as we can to make as much nonsense possible. The problem is, since it was absolutely abuse and not how we were supposed to be using these things, every time VRChat would update, one of these systems would break because it just wasn't how it was supposed to be used and the likes. And in December of 2019, VRChat unveiled their open alpha for Udon. Now, Udon is essentially a node-based scripting system for Unity, specifically that compiles for VRChat. It's largely based off of C#, and the problem that it had at the time when you released it is you could put about 5 or 6 nodes down and you'd be fine. But if, when you started getting bigger and bigger graphs, it just became an absolute performance hog. It just didn't work. You couldn't even scroll out at the time. So you always had a very small view of it. There were just a lot of interface problems.
That's how they got, yeah, that's how they put a parameter up from people making anything too complex.
Yeah, it was just a big performance issue at the time working in the system. However, I didn't have anything better to do, so I then spent the next 2 months figuring out how graphs work, how C# works, because that's the programming it was based on, and how programming specifically inside of Unity worked. It was another case of I didn't have much to do that January, so I just kind of dove in. The biggest issue at the time was VRChat had made some small amounts of documentation for it, such as, oh, here is how you make a cube spin in a circle. And the problem with that kind of documentation is that a lot of times people go into these kind of creative projects with an idea in mind, and they want to learn how to create that specific idea. They don't want a more abstract sense of, oh, here's how I learned the tools via making something spin around in a circle. They need a very basic tutorial of which they can actually make use of. So the most rudimentary thing that someone does in VRChat is toggling something on and off, maybe a mirror or a door or anything, a light, like a light switch. So that was my first tutorial video that I put out, was how to toggle a simple object on and off. And that was the only documentation for that for VRChat at the time. That kind of stuff just didn't exist. I didn't even want to make the tutorials at first because there were so many people in my peer group that I considered to be so much better at doing this kind of stuff than I did. Then I realized, oh, wait, I'm the only one who's a college student and not and like a full-time job and actually have time to do this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, 90, you know, what is it like 90% of it is just showing up and doing it. You know, I feel like that's just a lot of people in our industry, you know, when it comes to, can I do something or can I not, or, oh, they're so much better. It's like, if you honestly just put in time, you can make some cool things happen. And anybody that's still wanting to join into, like, that might be new who's listening and has always been interested in either doing VR chat levels or even going into their own route, it's a prime time to start. You know, if you got some good time on your hands, I mean, it's an industry that's about to be popping, and it's not impossible to get to a fun state where you're making some awesome worlds and amazing experiences. Like, you can really be getting that going in just a few months of learning. And all the resources are online, including Vogon, who has amazing tutorials. Hello, if you want to start, go to his channel right now. I can't emphasize that enough, because that's what I'm doing and I'm having the time of my life. So well, cool, man. Well, that's great. So I feel like we got the full background here. Let's kind of just go into and jump into the meaty stuff here. First off, before we go into all the announcements the other day from Facebook, aka now Meta, let's just kind of talk about some common language here, because I feel like in my previous talks with anybody or everybody, is people have different definitions of things. So let's start heavy here. What is your definition, or what do you consider to be the metaverse? How would you describe that?
I think the problem is a lot of people start with a question of what is the metaverse? And the problem is the metaverse, as it's been conceived, doesn't exist. So asking what it is doesn't really work. We have to ask what it is going to be. And depending on who you're talking to, it's all predictive. We're not quite sure how it's going to line up.
Right.
We're all coming up with ideas of what we want the metaverse to be and how it's going to function. Common ideas of what the metaverse is going to look like is it is going to be a internet-based platform in which experiences can be moved between seamlessly, and content and assets can be moved along through that same path as you move. So you would be able to use the same accounts, the same avatars, the same just settings and the likes between multiple platforms, with a primary focus on the basically the coming age of VR and AR in this kind of massive XR experience that they're trying to build onto.
Love that. I feel like that was a home run of an answer right there. That was perfect, man. Yeah, I definitely 100%. I couldn't have said it better myself. I feel like that was like a perfect explanation, because I find that most people think that they think the metaverse does exist right now. Like, some people think what Mark Zuckerberg showed the other day was a reality right now, and they just got to go get a headset and they're in it. You know, it was crazy. But, well, cool. Well, let's go on to the next thing. So what is the term? And you actually just mentioned it, but what would you say just the definition between, and we don't have to go too much into this, VR and AR, but then mainly the definition of XR.
Mm-hmm. So XR is the umbrella term for VR and AR and anything that can come along with that. Traditionally, VR is an experience where you have replaced your 360 vision with a different experience, primarily focusing on the visual and audio for that. And it completely covers up your interpretation of the area and space around you. AR is augmented reality, where it's like a filter between the two. You can still see the environment that you're in, but there's things that are overlaid in front of it, both audio and visual-wise. During last year's Facebook Connect, they actually had almost like a half an hour breakdown of how they were trying to spatialize audio for AR environments, like, say, having a conversation with someone in AR in a busy cafe. You want to be able to hear the person in that space as much as you see them in the space. Because, well, a lot of times, if you're watching a video on YouTube, for example, you can basically deal with worse quality footage a lot more than you can deal with worse quality audio.
Right, right. Yeah, and that is interesting. I always tell people whenever they're watching a movie and you can't tell why it's bad, it's usually the audio. You don't even think, it's just, I think it's the most subconscious, critical piece to having a good film, you know, and a lot of people just don't understand it, but it makes such a difference. Well, anyway, I want to ask you this question here, just kind of last question for definitions. So for AR, would you consider, and I've had this debate with a few people, does the footage have to be live for it to be considered AR? Or could you film something on your phone, go home, add in some text on the screen that looks like it's in the scene, but doing it through like After Effects, and then post that? Could you say that's AR?
I'm not certain. A lot of what I consider to be in the XR ecosystem is live experiential events. So a lot of times if I'm in a VR thing, like if you had recorded that whole experience, then put words between you and it, and then played it back in a VR headset where it replaced everything and you saw that previous experience, then I would consider that to be VR, because you're once again replacing it.
Right.
If you were to do that real time with having the words placed in front of you, then that would absolutely be AR. But I'm not quite sure how that would go about in a pre-recorded kind of experience.
Yeah, I feel like we need to have more debates on that a little bit, because I get people that tell me that, especially in the 3D industry, that they make AR like videos, and I go, oh, okay. And then I look at it, I'm like, oh, well, you kind of like brought that into Cinema 4D, and you made it look like it was real, like bringing Godzilla into Tokyo. Is that AR? They're like, well, it's reality, but it's augmented. I'm like, yeah, but I feel like the term AR has to do with live experiences. I don't know. I had to ask your opinion on that, because I've just gotten too many debates, and I feel like it just depends on who you ask. Well, cool. Well, let's go into, this week. I mean, that conference on Facebook, let's go. Let's talk about it. What was your thoughts, man? Break it down for me.
Well, there was a lot that they went into, and not a whole lot of substance, if you will. There were two main things that they were trying to push with this year's Facebook Connect. One, it was the information that they are transferring from a social media company to a metaverse company. And as a statement like that, that is incredibly nebulous. What I just said could easily mean nothing to any of the people that is listening to. But they had basically an hour and a half to go over exactly that. They were talking about less of what they're doing right now and what they want to create with their products, with their ecosystems, and everything that they're trying to move towards. They basically started the announcement, the big conference, by just saying, we're not going to have a whole lot of hardware news today. We're instead going to focus on what we want to see down the line. But
right,
that wasn't incredibly communicated in a lot of ways. So a lot of it was just, it came across more as, this is what VR is and what we are trying to sell to people. And it would be like an AR experience of someone playing chess against a force ghost. Like,
yeah.
Sure, that is a decade, two, or maybe even three down the line.
Right.
But they're tying a lot of these future ideas and technologies into technologies and ideas that exist already that they are actively working on. They just released their Ray-Ban Stories, the glasses with cameras on them. And that's basically their stepping point in order to build onto actual AR glasses.
Right.
So we can go into that more, but more of a summary on the actual event itself. They went into that, but they also went into a lot of how they want experiences to be able to smoothly go between each other. Like, sure, they brought up what they're working on, such as Horizon Homes, Horizon Work, Horizon Worlds. That's it. Horizon Worlds is their platform for developing environments and different experiences. Horizon Home is their, essentially, the environment you load into when you put on the Quest. And they're trying to make these different experiences as seamless together as possible. And since nothing really has any standards right now for transferring stuff across, they're just kind of mediating it with a Facebook account for storing your avatar and things so that those can be seamless between the two. of course, right now you really only have your avatar for Facebook things. So the metaverse isn't here. They're trying to sell the metaverse. They stated that it's not here yet, but it is that idea that they are trying to focus on.
Yep. Yeah, I thought it was very... It gave me chills down my spine when I watched it, almost like watching Star Wars for the first time as a kid. It was so cool. I loved it. But man, did it also just kind of reek of snake oil. You know, it was so... Like, I was like, man, this is exactly... It kind of was like everything I thought they showed. You know, everything I hoped it would be is what they presented, which was so cool. But at the same time, it was like, but that's not realistic right now. You know, that's so far away. And it kind of was weird to me that, I don't know, it was almost like presenting it as if though they did it, or they already are doing, or they're going to be the ones that make it. You know, it was, I don't know. I was very, just my overall opinions, very mixed about it. It felt, I wish it was more, I don't want to say honest, but I wish there was more other brands kind of incorporated into it, like the Facebook Marketplace. Maybe they actually showed Best Buy, or they, you know, they say, oh, it's open, we want everybody to be involved. Well, why didn't you show that? You know, why didn't you show other companies being involved in this mixed with, you know, your local businesses and stuff? I feel like that would have had a great personal touch. And then on top of that, you know, as much as I didn't want to think they were going to have world dominance, they have now claimed the name Meta. It felt sleazy a bit to me. At first, I thought it was cool because it was just after the conference. I was like, of course. But then I started thinking about it more and I was like, they're just trying to intertwine their name into the future of our technology, which is kind of, I don't know. I kind of didn't like it. I don't like it anymore. At first I liked it. Now I don't. But that was my overall thoughts on that. So with the headset, that what was the new headset they briefly mentioned? What was that called? Catalina? No.
I don't remember the name of it, but yeah. It was one of those Project Blank. How the Ray-Ban stories were Project Aria forever.
Right.
The headset that they showed off had actually been showcased in a bunch of leaked videos as well, and even in official images of Boz wearing it. So
yep.
Everyone thought there was going to be a big demonstration today, but they really just announced that it exists and is coming out maybe midway through next year. What we do know about it is that it's going to have a small form factor with built-in eye tracking and facial tracking for their presence control and the likes, as well as the hand tracking and the likes for all that kind of stuff. They even stated in this talk that it's going to be on the higher end of their price margins, which, well, when you're thinking about the Quest is presently being sold at a loss, and the other headset released recently is the Pimax going for over $2,000, we really have no idea what Facebook means by on the higher end.
Right. I have no idea. I mean, I loved the look of the glasses overall. I would probably spend a little bit more money. I mean, $300 is a great range. I feel like when they did $300 for the Quest 2, I think that's the bargain of a lifetime. They take a loss on every single headset. And that's just because they know you're going to have, you know, be spending in their marketplace store. You're going to get a game. Like, as soon as you get the headset, you're going to become another $60, you know, or $40 for that same day. So it's a little bit more than just that. I feel like the new headsets, I would totally pay a little bit more money to have that sleek look. I know that. Ooh, I can't even remember which. I want to say Samsung came out with a new headset. It has kind of like a bug eye look to it. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
HTC.
HTC. That's right.
Flow that they just released.
Yes. I loved the look and feel of that, and the best quote I heard was somebody say on a review of video that the biggest breakthrough of the headset wasn't necessarily anything like, you know, better processing power, or better graphics or anything like that. But the most powerful part of it was that it's something where you could almost wear in public, like in an airplane. You're not going to feel completely weird having this on your face, you know, to watch a movie while you're sitting down for an hour, or on the train. You might actually wear that in public, whereas the Quest and these other ones that are sticking out 6 inches off your face are just a little too awkward. And I really related to that. So I think having these new, sleeker looking models, I mean, I'd almost, you know, I'd pay a little bit more money. I'd even have maybe a quality deduction from other headsets just to have, at least for my take out of the house one. So I'm pretty excited about that. I was a little disappointed though that they didn't mention anything else, like even a release date or, yeah, like a price point or anything about any of the headsets. I was kind of expecting that, mm-hmm. but
yeah,
you win some, you lose some. Do you know when they are going to be talking about the headsets coming up for Facebook?
I'm not certain. I know that they announced them for upcoming, like in the next year, they will be releasing it. And they did state that they're actively saving some information about it for their the demo of it next year. I don't think it'll be until the Facebook Connect next year. I think we'll probably get information of it quarter one, and maybe a release quarter two, or maybe just sometime in the summer.
Yeah, I would love to get a new Quest. I feel like Quest is just, it's so close. Pretty much my goal for Quest is to be able to access any VR chat world I want without having to be remote into my PC. I just want to be able to go anywhere, get a Wi-Fi connection, and go into any world and use any avatar. Then we've made it. You know, that the Quest has made it. But the limited features just drive me crazy using on it on some apps, you know. But I feel like that, and it probably will always have limitations, because let's be honest, until there's a mega server where you're remoting into like mega computers through like 5G perfect connections where all the processing power is somewhere else that you can remote into, the hardware on the headset is just not going to be able to keep up with someone's home PC. You know, it's so it might always have limitations, but for VR chat though, that's the main goal. That's my main goal.
Yeah, there's a lot of technical hurdles that would go into that, specifically due to the fact that the headsets are based on Android architecture. Like say if you're building a Unity experience, it quite literally needs to be uploaded twice, once for PC and once for Android. It's because they're just built very separately. If the headset were able to access a separate machine that would be able to handle that, sure, it would be perfectly fine. In fact, one of the things that Facebook is, well, I guess Meta, is now attempting to work towards is having external compute devices for their hardware, specifically for glasses or the likes. Because let's be honest, there's only so much tech that you can throw into a metal line going along the side of your head. And they alluded to this a little bit during the Kinect. It wasn't outright stated, but you could definitely read between the lines that the Quest and everything they're working on is the Qualcomm XR2 chipset. They're essentially making an Android phone. They are not a phone company, nor do they want to be. One of the things that they'll likely try to do is turn your phone into the compute device for your glasses. And
interesting.
That makes sense to me, but I suspect that there's a little bit of, well, trouble in paradise as to getting that kind of stuff functioning, whether or not it's just for getting development access for both Android and iPhone or not. Because right now, that's what Vive is doing. That's what the Vive Flow is. It functions for a little while, but is largely controlled by an Android phone device. Like, you quite literally need an Android phone as the controller for the device, for pressing buttons, for moving your hand around.
Yeah. I thought that the phone on the Flow is so cool. How you can just see the phone kind of perfectly. You know, you have your head set up and then the controller, you know, it's you because you always carry your phone around. You wouldn't want to carry around an extra controller. I've heard some people say they wish they could because it doesn't support Apple right now. So they wish they had the option to not have to have an Android phone. But what would then... So I have to ask this. I'm kind of curious. Do these programs... So when Apple starts to get into the game, do you think there's going to have to be for VR chat, for instance, if they make their own headset... Would you have to have an Apple make a third version of a world, like one for Android, one for PC, and then one for Apple?
I don't believe so. It might be. Unfortunately, I don't have a definitive answer on that, though I feel as though running VR chat standalone would be operational on Mac. Because right now, you don't need a separate architecture for Linux. Like, you can load and run VRChat on Linux, and that's perfectly fine. You can run VRChat on the Steam Deck, and that is also operational. One thing that I think we're going to be seeing is more Linux-based headsets in the future over Android.
Whoa, really? Why is that?
Well, for one, I think Android is limited in architecture just due to its comparison to PC hardware, and two... Because that's what Valve is doing right now. They have developed a standalone computer that is about this big, which is, kind of the size of a headset. And they've outright stated that it is not ideal to run VR on the Steam Deck. But that would be running a VR headset that is plugged into the Steam Deck. What they have stated... is when asked whether or not the Steam Deck is any sign of future technology, the people who were being interviewed were just kind of laughed and said that it is very important to their future work. And that is as much as we got. So very obviously, yes, the technology being utilized for the Steam Deck is almost likely going to be utilized for a upcoming VR headset that is Linux-based, standalone/PC compatibility. We have no real information on this outside of the 8 billion patents that Valve had put out over the past year trying to change something. Who knows? And with every change, who knows what's different? The new Pimax headset, for example, has a Qualcomm XR2 chipset in it, but it also just functions as a Steam VR headset by plugging it into your computer. So who knows if both experiences are going to be entirely different or if they're going to be seamless between each other.
Yeah, that's one thing. Another thing is I'm just so curious about how the seamless integration is going to go between all of these softwares. I mean, it's got to be so difficult just for the metaverse, the idea, like it's just so much work has to go into making everything seamless between all these operating systems and headsets and different structures. And it's a lot. And I find that also, I wonder with Apple, like if they are kicking themselves thinking they're too late to the game, because for the headsets and the AR and the VR, I feel like the Quest is almost what I thought Apple would have dropped by now. You know, it's like, how are you gonna, you know, Apple is known for making groundbreaking products. What are you gonna do to kind of be groundbreaking in this industry? It's getting pretty far, you know, like, I don't know. You had an opportunity last year, you know, or right before the Quest 2 came out to have a pretty good competitor on the market where we could forgive some stuff. You could do the trial and errors with what people like, what people don't like, you know, and then, but now the wave is here. So it's, you better have a pretty damn good headset, Apple, if you come out with a headset, because people are getting into this field. And again, with the metaverse, it's, if they did try and make their own operating system and their own type of structure for the headset, it's just going to like throw another wrench in. But It's crazy. At going to the Steam Deck, I kind of love this idea of having that being an extra processing power for, you know, or even like as a Wi-Fi device, right? Or something where, you know, taking all of the computing power out of the headset and into an external machine, I think is just genius, because I could put anything on my lap. If I could put the whole, just wear glasses and put something the size of an Oculus Quest on my lap, that to me is a billion times better, even if I got to hold it, you know? Just it not on my face. It's your face, you know? That's the one place you don't want ridiculous objects just protruding off of you. And yeah, and I also heard this, saying lots of also's and ands and whatnot, that Nintendo is getting into VR. I have not heard that. Okay, well, I'm going to Google that more then before I say anything.
I know in the past Nintendo has done a few quote-unquote VR things. Nintendo Labo, the cardboard system for putting different things together. One of the options that you can create with that is essentially a Google Cardboard for the Switch. And there's a few different games that offer compatibility with that, such as Smash Bros., Breath of the Wild, which basically just gives you a, like, 360 perspective of where the actual camera would have been in that point.
What was the old school? I was trying to Google it here.
The Virtual Boy.
Virtual Boy. There we go. All right. Yeah, I was going to say Virtual Boy 2. Imagine if they just dropped that and they just called it Virtual Boy, which maybe the first one was kind of a flop, but...
Literally, they were selling console.
Yeah, so maybe they'll stray away from it, but you know that's what everyone's going to be calling it when it comes out. But the VR headset, yeah, that's right. I forgot they had that kind of split screen system that they were, you know, where you can insert the Quest into, which I guess that also works because it is, I mean, you have the display right there, which, you know, so that is an option. But again, it's just so heavy. I feel like having it lighter would be better, but I was also thinking that it would be very interesting for Nintendo to go into VR solely based on that the characters are kind of already meant for a playable, low, you know, a less intensive, heavy games. You know, it's they're usually cel-shaded and, you know, pretty light, and you could just have some really fun VR experiences in there with their games, you know? Like, you don't have to worry about having these, like, hyper-realistic things that, which is kind of what everyone's going for. Nintendo's known for just having amazing experiences because the games are just fun. It's just pure fun, and, you know, they could probably easily run an awesome, amazing game on just something like a Quest, you know, or just a really thin screen right off the Switch. I don't know. I think that would be a pretty killer move for them to get into. Well, so let's go on here. Let me get to this next question. What do you see being the biggest fear in this metaverse VR XR industry? Do you have any like you know, a lot, some people think about this is the start of Terminator, this is the start of the Matrix, you know, Mark Zuckerberg taking all of our, you know, this is him controlling our brains. Do you have any, what's your thoughts and fears moving forward?
Well, the biggest fears are always the likes of the stifleization of innovation. When do things stop progressing at light years speed? If we're looking at cell phones, yeah, the power and ability behind every cell phone every year gets better and better. But if you look at it like a cell phone from like 6 feet away, it looks exactly like a cell phone that you saw a decade ago. Yeah. The shape and form factor, everything about those experiences was changing so rapidly as people changed what they wanted it to be used for and what we can do with it. But these days, your only option for a physical keyboard on it, if you wanted it, is a like $20 phone that you can't justify purchasing if you're not an 80-year-old individual.
Right.
So once we get, it will eventually happen. This is not something I'm afraid of. This is something I've accepted is going to happen. There's going to be a universal standard for how these kind of systems are going to work. a Pimax headset and a Oculus headset or Meta headset in the future are going to be almost indistinguishable outside of like colors or maybe a little bit of shape. Eventually there's just going to be a standard where there's is going to lose a bit of that like weirdness and how clunky things are, and that's going to be great for sales,
right?
But it won't be as like haha funny when someone looks at a Pimax with all of its rubber gommets and everything just holding it together. It's going to be the same thing visibly, but right. still be $3,000 more. Everything's going to be internal, and I don't know. I've always been the person who wanted to strap as many cables to my body and make things work as possible. So I am all for the cyberpunk dystopia of the 1990s.
And you don't want to lose it.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah, man. I definitely love that. I actually had a similar thought the other day, and I kind of was wondering to myself, is there, could Facebook's route or anyone's route of having a global community, because I listened to a kind of, it wasn't like a private thing, but it's like you had to sign up to listen to some of the leaders of the Facebook's metaverse or Meta's metaverse. So dumb. Like some of their leaders talk about what they were expecting to do. It was only like 1,000 people listening. I like signed up. It was a 2-hour conference, but they were talking about how they wanted every single person to have a headset. They didn't want industries to get left behind. And they said it was one of the biggest battles is saying, how do you, because you're going to have to cut off somebody. Somebody can't afford it. So who is that bar going to be? And then what's in that industry? Who are those people? And it was a good thing and a bad thing. But what I kind of, it was a good thing in the sense that, I should clarify, it's a good thing that they are very inclusive, and it was great to hear them having long discussions about making sure that this was good for the world and how everybody should be a part of this. The thing that kind of scared me is it sounded like they were downgrading VR, and it was, I had this kind of feeling that and fear that to appease to the masses, the experiences have to get dumbed down to cheaper technology. And that kind of worried me, and that other companies would be scared to advance further because they knew other people couldn't experience any there these what we can do because people can't afford that technology. Whereas right now we kind of have a range of products, but what I get scared of is that if Facebook sets the standard, then there might not be people willing to make these higher experiences or try and push the bar of what we can do. Because everybody's going to have just mediocre headsets. Whereas, you know, that's kind of one of my fears is I hope that companies are continually trying to just push the bar on what's possible. You know, Pimax having the 12K resolution headsets that they rumored it, you know. People have said they don't always deliver, but they showed they have a 12K headset coming out. I'm not sure what games or what kind of a computer you need to run that thing, but I just hope that's always coming out and there's always a demand and need for it. Because that is too cool, and I hope to get one. And for anybody listening and has been debating on Pimax, there's people, I've heard that if you get the 8K headset, they will deduct that price right off the 12K. So say it's like $2,500, I think, and the 12K is like $3,000 or something, or like $4,000, I'm not sure, just XYZ price and XYZ price. They will completely cut the $2,000 plus price that you spent on the 8K headset, and when you go to get the 12, they'll just deduct that. So it's like you pretty much get a free headset. I think, is that kind of what you heard, or have you heard
of that? That's how I understand it. And realistically, yeah. that wouldn't even be them taking that much of a profit loss. What if you're considering that 8 people have bought the other Pimax headsets?
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like they might be doing that. I know when we were mentioning it the other day, you were saying you might have to return the 8K and then they'll send you the 12K back, which I think that might be possible. I'm hoping you just get to keep the 8K, but also I think you even said this as well, but like, who wants to keep a headset that big in your room anyway? Because those things are pretty massive. But okay, cool. Well, so here's another question. I'll ask this one and then we'll go into the next one a little bit better. Where do you see the metaverse? I'll even say this. How about this? I think we should stop saying the word metaverse. I think we need to cut that word out completely and either just turn it into like, you know, the XR-verse or the Omniverse. I feel like just a rebrand of the metaverse might be a good idea. And if we do it, it needs to be sooner than later. And that way, I feel like we aren't stuck with feeling like Facebook is the leader of this thing because now their name's Meta and now the metaverse and there's a company called Meta and they must be the leaders. But that was my thought. So anyway, going back to, the original question, is where do you see the metaverse actually being in 10 years?
In 10 years, I believe that we will have a system of platforms that we can go through for maybe the first like big 3 or 4 different experiences where you can move around between them using the same account. I do not see it being a seamless experience that every company in the world has jumped on. If we get to a point where there's enough companies all working together on one thing, well, that's going to be magic if that happens. Like, different companies all trying to work on the same ecosystem. Well, everyone has their own ecosystem. Like, we still have the Amazon App Store. That's a thing that still exists. Like,
right.
The fact that there's like the Google and the Apple app stores are just a sign that there's always going to be different ecosystems for something.
Yeah.
As long as the problem is a platform of any sort needs to be controlled and run by something. What tends to be envisioned a lot of times for the metaverse is it's synonymous in functionality with the internet. Anyone can make a platform or application or a website on the internet where you are using the same browser to go to the same, all the different websites. And that tends to be what is brought up a lot of times as what they want the metaverse to be. And I think in 10 years, we will have a functional version of a multi-platform experience. We will not have our fantastical imaginations of it quite yet.
Okay, interesting. I also find that, you know, I think server space might become an issue. Maybe not, but maybe so. I don't know. I wonder some of the difficult tasks that people will have to overcome or companies will have to overcome because say Facebook, right? Facebook realistically is just photos, some videos, and just text, you know? When you go into the metaverse, it's going to be 3D architectures and space and, you know, some of these gig models I want to upload are over, I mean, again, they're gigs, you know? So I'm curious as to, you know, when you have over a billion people potentially uploading gigs at the same time, how that will work. I guess we're going to have some 3D model converters for compression, but I don't know. That's one thing. So we're going into, and, you know, I will say, just want to mention that I feel like there are 3 companies. I'm very curious, but I know Pixar NVIDIA and Apple are working on a physics engine for the metaverse. Now, so there is an interesting with Apple having the M1 chip and NVIDIA having their own processors. It's a little bit of a unity, and what having a universal physics engine means, I have no idea. I mean, I know what a physics engine is, but is everyone going to be using this? I don't know. Curious to see that, but I kind of agree with you. I don't know about multiple companies looking at working together. Yeah. So talking about corporations again and kind of the unity about it, how do you see companies jumping into the metaverse? And yeah, where do you see companies kind of having their own marketplaces, selling online? Like what do you envision like a company like Best Buy doing?
Right. In a lot of ways, a lot of different companies are probably going to use this as a open space where they can do marketplace work and do sales or just any kind of stuff like that. Mm. But they're all going to be coming at it with different pre-existing experiences for VR and 3D or just any kind of platform like that. Some companies are going to come in with all their own ideas of how they set up this kind of stuff, and they're going to be good at it. There's going to be companies that know what they're doing.
Right.
But for the majority of them, they're kind of just going to start Googling what to do in a lot of ways to get that kind of stuff set up. And in many ways, that's actually a big topic that was talked during the Facebook Connect. So one of the things that they're focusing on is open access to setting up these kind of systems. One of the systems that Facebook focused on during their talk was the Presence system, which is basically a universal system that they're working on for touching and buttons and moving things around, both in VR and AR.
Mm.
And they went on that basically as soon as Boz came on screen again, because he's a bit more of the hardware. So they got to talk a little bit about that when he came on screen. Another thing that they brought up was the Spark system that they're working on, which is for AR and the likes, putting things in your environment really easily and having actual like movement and occlusion with those objects when you're moving them with your hands. So they're actively working on these kind of products that they can put out and have people use as a universal standard. Another thing that leads into this is originally Oculus had their own SDK for running VR and the likes. Like they were one of the first people to put it out, so they needed a standard, so they made their own. Facebook has recently dropped that standard in favor of OpenXR. OpenXR being a different like VR standard that basically is a universal input system. So a Oculus controller and a Index controller all just will be understood as this is what grip is. This is what trigger is.
Mm.
This is what your right joystick is. It's all universally understood as the same inputs. And with that, that is a massive leap in what was happening prior. So originally, Valve used OpenVR, which is a system that was open source that they were primarily utilizing, but recently has been developed less and less, and everyone's moving more towards OpenXR. In fact, that's the one that Unity automatically imports these days when you're building a new VR project.
Mm.
It'll be neat to see how we get different standards that come about, because the whole joke is, oh no, there's four competing standards for this thing. I'm going to make a new one that's going to be really nice. Oh no, there's five competing standards for something. So, yeah.
Yeah. But no, I love that. I mean, I guess, and I'm not going to say Facebook is turning a new leaf, but that's awesome that they would do something like that and have, you know, just release and and say, hey, we're going into this open source code where anybody can use it from any controller. I forget, I wish I could remember his name, but he's doing some haptic feedback controllers. Do you know who I'm talking? He has like a whole TikTok and he makes his own VR controllers.
Oh, I don't remember his name, but yeah, the string ones.
Yeah, he's, you know, I love it for like, you know, it just kind of allows people to make their own devices and, you know, just have easily accessible working computes going on. Mm-hmm. So I have to ask this. What do you think? I actually had a discussion randomly last night with somebody about this. What do you think? How do you protect the metaverse from crime and from what are the standards? Does the government now need to come in and start regulating the metaverse? Do they need to start getting involved in VR chat now? Who is going to be kind of policing what people do or don't upload? Where are there going to be rules, laws? I mean, because I will say too, with VR and AR is like, it is a lot more immersive and the experiences are a lot more intense. I mean, I can't even imagine watching a graphical movie or having a graphical 3D experience happen in front of me. That could be that would be terrible. And maybe for other people. And, you know, that kind of like shocked my world a little bit. And I was like, dang, that, you know, how do you prevent people from doing that? Or what is the laws? Do we want the government stepping in and doing that? Or do we want individual community to be kind of the guideline enforcers? And yeah, what have you thought about that at all? And if so, what are kind of your thoughts around that matter?
Yeah, so one of the first things we're going to see is just evolutions of laws that we already have, like COPPA and DMCA and the likes. Pretty much, those are probably going to start by being reinterpreted slightly for these expanded use cases for it, because let's be honest, when DMCA was written, it was like, I think, mid-90s. There was, what, Napster? And so there wasn't a whole lot of complex experiences where there were these use cases for things. Like, I could quite literally be playing music on a radio in a virtual environment, and that is counting as sharing that audio file remotely on the internet.
Wow, right.
So there's a lot of these things that will likely have to be rethought, and again, are probably going to end up being these kind of pseudo-universal laws that whatever government is handling. So like right now, I know the US government handles most of the US internet laws, obviously. But a lot of what we're probably going to see is these kind of expanded regulations that are agreed upon between separate countries and the likes. And well, then instead of worrying about companies agreeing, we have to worry about countries agreeing. So
right.
Then we just have to hope for that. But of course, as all digital regulation goes, it's all going to be 10 to 15 years delayed. Everything's going to be slow. There's not going to be the expanded lobbying for that kind of digital infrastructure yet, because most of that kind of push is coming from different already rooted, established applications for that kind of thing.
Right.
So we're going to be seeing very, very slow development in the kind of regulations that we would have for all these expanded environments and the likes.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. It's interesting. I'm hoping it. I don't know. I haven't really gave it too much thought about how it'll be regulated or what the regulations will be. And yeah, like you said, having like a public radio or movie theaters, like how many. I may or may not have gone to a movie theater that had movies that were made, you know, legally or not legally purchased. Not going to say, but, you know, you're in a movie theater with a bunch of people watching a movie. It's insane. I mean, I don't know how this is or what it is, but I'm doing it and it's awesome, you know, but there's got to be, I guess there doesn't have to be, but I'm assuming there will be some sort of thing. This is kind of like the worst scenario, and call me crazy on this, and this probably won't happen, but and I'm also for and against this This is going to sound terrible. Ready for terrible thought of the day? Make that a segment. Is having some sort of universal, and I don't want to say metaverse because I kind of really want to cut that word out of my dictionary, but having some sort of online passport. And if you do terrible things in virtual reality, like upload some terrible things or anything, like you can get docked or you can get kicked or banned, or you can have a bad rating or a good rating. And it's virtual for reality and real life. I'm against that, obviously, especially for like credit scores and buying a house, you know, whatever. Heard in like China, you can get points for seeing your grandma. I don't want to go into whole human morals, but maybe for online presence, if there was like a very simple thing, like, you know, if you have extreme excessive language and there's a family center or something like that, that person can't come in, you know, because how are you going to stop someone coming in from an Apple Metaverse store and just causing a ruckus? You're going to kick them out? How do you kick them out? You know, or how people could be flooding and memeing. You can't really control the floodgates. But if you had a bad user rating and it, you know, for a certain amount of time, then yeah, you can't go in. And if you want to go in and start cursing around kids, well, guess what? You're docked and you can't come into public stores for a month. And then maybe you can reconsider and you can bring your court case up. If you feel like you didn't say it, you said sass and not at, you know, you can bring that up to whatever new system there is. But I don't know. Those are so hypothetical down the road. We're not Mark Zuckerberg over here making up shit, but that was something I was thinking about and I could see happening. So what industries do you see being most affected by this new like VR, AR world experiences? Whether it goes from people working completely remotely to doing like team meetings or just entire concerts or I don't know, stores, or you know, what do you see changing the most for businesses and or consumers and such?
I think a lot of what we'll see is very slow change, but also very gradual universal change. In the sense of, oh, I have a headset on, will essentially be, oh, I have a phone in my pocket. So whether or not you're utilizing it will probably be regulated on a per job basis. Like, oh, you can't have your phone out for this kind of stuff. But at the same time, you might also get them applied to you for work. Like you would get like a work laptop or the likes similarly. One of the things that I've seen a lot of use cases for, like the XR glasses or the likes. One of the big use cases of the HoloLens or the likes is I remember seeing a showcase where someone was doing dangerous electrical work and they were not a trained professional for it. The trained professional was halfway across the world and they were working with them through the XR goggles that the person was wearing who was at the electrical equipment. And then they would basically project like with a marker, like this is the thing that you need to move here or there. So I believe that this has massive implications for like dangerous manual work and just things that you can't get an on-site specialist for, even like the medical field. There's probably going to be astounding ways that this stuff can be implemented and likely in ways that we just don't have proper ways of visualizing right now. We don't have good ways of understanding, oh, this is going to be the use case of it. Because in a lot of ways, with the Quest or some of the other things, like the HoloLens or the likes, we have a lot of the technology that can be used for that. We just haven't gotten the perfect applications or even the form factor to actually make those things happen. So a lot of times, that's just going to come when it does. And that's about as nebulous and, well, lack of exciting as I could have possibly put that. But I really do think that this is something that is going to evolve over time rather than be like, bang, it's perfect. We know what's happening.
Yep. I actually listened to a, I think it will take some time, but I definitely do see like a lot of these fields going in that general direction. And I personally think, like, even, you know, especially with the training, you know, there was an interesting study I heard. So third sourcing here, it was on a podcast. I forget what the podcast name was called, but the guy was telling about their studies in schooling, and essentially they were trying to talk about the Wright brothers and their flying of the airplane, right? And they did like a 20-minute segment with kids just talking about the plane and how far it traveled and all of these things. And then they gave them a quiz. And the class, this one class, could barely even have, they got maybe 25, 50% of the questions right. It was not a lot. And the retention span was down, you know, just not a lot of participation in the class. The energy was dead. But then they gave another class headsets. FYI, do not give kids 13 and under headsets in VR. There's like weird, crazy studies right now. But anyway, these kids were like 15, 16. And they put them into a field where they actually got to see the airplane and all of the different parts with labels and what each part did. And they got to see both the Wright brothers there. And then they got to even see how far the plane flew over their head. And they were so excited. They didn't want to leave. And then even when they were asking questions, the kids were just losing it. They couldn't get the class to stop talking. And on top of that, they knew almost every single question. I mean, it was like a groundbreaking study for education, and from what this guy was talking about. And I just can't, but like, I honestly see that happening in the future. I know I love learning, and I love learning even more in VR. Some of the Planet Earth, got, you know, they have the Planet Earth episodes in VR now, some of them. It's just so unbelievable. And it stays in your mind. And it's just so much easier to digest and understand and retain the information when you're seeing it visually and you're hearing the audio of the actual thing you're supposed to be learning. And you get to interact with it physically. You're like using every single sense to learn something. It's just, it's so, I don't know. I feel like that's something I think will have a huge impact on everyday life, will be how we learn. And I'm excited about that. But anyway, man, this was a great talk. I highly enjoyed this. I'm excited to see the future. I'm excited. We'll have to have you back on again. Maybe we'll make this a yearly after Facebook bullshit talk or any Facebook updates, man. But yeah, I just want to give you the floor real quick. Does anything you want to say, anything you want to mention, URLs, websites, anything like that?
Well, if you're exceedingly interested in programming for VRChat specifically, and not an employee of VRChat, but instead community content, I do tutorial videos on exactly that. My guess is if you are at the point where you need tutorial videos for watching, for making VRChat content, though, you probably knew about half the stuff that was in this podcast.
I love it, man. Well, hey, yo, definitely come on. And guys, definitely check out, even I'm just going to say, if you're even slightly curious and you don't even like VRChat, they're just great videos. He does an absolute amazing job on these tutorials. And they also just really get your imagination going on what's possible. And it just gives you a better understanding of how to do things. So definitely check those out. Yo, thanks so much for coming on, man. It was an absolute pleasure.